from metal spearheads to furniture that could still hold weight. With Seolin's help, Raoden had sectioned off a marginally defensible section of town to be New Elantris. Only 11 streets led into the area, and there was even a small wall, the original purpose of which baffled them, running along about half of the perimeter. Raoden had placed sentries at the tip of every road to watch for approaching marauders. The system kept them from being overwhelmed. Fortunately, Sheor's men tended to attack in small bands. As long as Raoden's guards could get enough warning, they could gather and defeat any one group. If Sheor ever organized a larger, multi-directional assault, however, the result would be disastrous. Raoden's band of women, children, and weakened men just couldn't stand against the feral creatures. Seolin had begun teaching simple combat techniques to those capable, but he could use only the safest and most elementary training methods, lest the combatants' sparring wounds prove more dangerous than Sheor's attacks. The people, however, never expected the fighting to go that far. Raoden heard what they said about him. They assumed that Lord Spirit would somehow find a way to bring Sheor to their side, just as he had with Eärendil and Caerita. Raoden began to feel sick as they walked toward the chapel. The mounting pains of his several dozen bruises and scrapes suddenly pressing against him with suffocating pressure. It was as if his body were encased in a blazing fire, his flesh, bones, and soul being consumed in the heat. "I've failed them," he said quietly. Galadin shook his head. "We can't always get what we want on the first try, Kolo. You'll find a way. I would never have thought you'd get this far." "I was lucky. A lucky fool," Raoden thought, as the pain pounded against him.
"Sule?"
Galadin asked, suddenly looking at Raoden with concern. "Are you all right?" "Must be strong. They need me to be strong." With an inner groan of defiance, Raoden pushed through the haze of agony and managed a weak smile. "I'm fine." "I've never seen you look like this, Sule." Raoden shook his head, leaning up against the stone wall of a nearby building. "I'll be all right. I was just wondering what we're going to do about Sheor. We can't reason with her, and we can't defeat her men by force."
"You'll think of something," Galadin said,
his normal pessimism overridden by an obvious desire to encourage his friend. "Or we'll all die," Raoden thought, hands growing tense as they gripped the stone corner of the wall. "For good this time." With a sigh, Raoden pushed away from the wall, the stone crumbling beneath his fingers. He turned around and looked at the wall with surprise. Kahar had recently cleaned it, and its white marble glistened in the sun, except where Raoden's fingers had crushed it.
"Stronger than you thought?" Galadin asked with a smirk.
Raoden raised his eyebrows, brushing at the broken stone. It crumbled away.
"This stone is as soft as pumice."
"Elantris," Galadin said. "Things decay quickly here."
"Yes, but marble?"
"Everything. People, too." Raoden smacked the broken spot of stone with another rock. Small flecks and chips cascaded to the ground at the impact.
"It's all connected somehow, Galadin. The door is linked to Elantris, just as it's linked to Eärendil itself."
"But why would the door do this, Sule?" Galadin asked with a shake of his head. "Why destroy the city?"
"Maybe it's not the door," Raoden said. Maybe it's the sudden absence of the door. The magic, the door, was a part of the city. Every stone burned with its own light. When that power was removed, the city was left hollow, like the discarded shell of a small river crawler that has grown too big for its skin. The stones are empty.
How can a stone be empty? Galadin said skeptically.
Raoden cracked off another piece of marble, crumbling it between his fingers. Like this, my friend. The rock spent so long infused by the door that it was weakened irreparably by the Riod. This city really is a corpse. Its spirit has fled. The discussion was interrupted by the approach of an exhausted Marishi.
My lord's spirit, he said urgently as he approached.
What is it? Raoden asked apprehensively. Another attack? Marishi shook his head, confusion in his eyes.
No, something different, my lord. We don't know what to make of it. We're being invaded.
By whom? Marishi half-smiled, then shrugged.
We think she's a princess.
Raoden crouched on the rooftop, Galadin at his side. The building had been transformed into an observation area to watch the gates for newcomers. From its vantage, he could get a very good look at what was happening in the courtyard. A crowd had gathered atop the Elantra city wall. The gate stood open. That fact was amazing enough. Normally, after newcomers were cast in, the gate was immediately pulled shut, as if the guards were frightened to let it rest open for even a moment. However, in front of the open gate sat a sight even more dumbfounding. A large horse-drawn cart rested in the middle of the courtyard, a cluster of well-dressed men huddled at its side. Only one person looked unafraid of what she saw before her. A tall woman with long blonde hair. She wore a smooth, full-bodied brown dress with a black scarf tied around her right arm, and she stood with her arm raised to one of the horse's necks, patting the nervous beast. Her sharp face held a set of capable eyes, and she studied the dirty, slime-splattered courtyard with a calculating expression.
Raoden exhaled. I only saw her through Sion, he mumbled. I didn't realize she was so beautiful.
You recognize her, Sule? Galadin asked in surprise.
I think I'm married to her. That could only be Serene, the daughter of King Eventio of Teode.
What is she doing here? Galadin asked.
More importantly, Raoden said, what is she doing here with a dozen of Aerilon's most influential nobles? The older man near the back is Duke Roail. Some say he's the second most powerful man in the kingdom.
Galadin nodded.
And I assume the young Jindo is Shuden, the Baron of K.A. Plantation?
Raoden smiled. I thought you were a simple farmer.
Shuden's caravan route runs directly through the center of Dula del Sule. There isn't a Dula alive who doesn't know his name.
Ah, Raoden said. Counts Ahane and Eundel are there as well. What in Domai's name is that woman planning?
As if in response to Raoden's question, Princess Serene finished her contemplation of Elantris. She turned and walked to the back of the cart, shooing away apprehensive nobles with an intolerant hand. Then she reached up and whipped the cloth off the back of the cart, revealing its contents. The cart was piled with food.
Eidos Domai, Raoden cursed. Galadin, we're in trouble.
Galadin regarded him with a frown. There was hunger in his eyes. What in Dolokhin are you blabbering about, Sule?
That's food.
And my intuition tells me she's going to give it to us. What could be wrong with that?
She must be doing her widow's trial, Riordan said. Only a foreigner would think to come into Elantris.
Sule, Galadin said instantly, tell me what you're thinking.
The timing is wrong, Galadin, Riordan explained. Our people are just starting to get a sense of independence. They're beginning to focus on the future and forget their pain. If someone hands them food now, they'll forget everything else. For a short time, they'll be fed, but widow's trials only last a few weeks. After that, it will be back to the pain, the hunger, and the self-pity. My princess out there could destroy everything we've been working for.
You're right, Galadin realized. I'd almost forgotten how hungry I was until I saw that food.
Riordan groaned.
What?
What happens when Sheor hears about this? Her men will attack that cart like a pack of wolves. No telling what kind of damage it would do if one of them killed a count or a baron. My father only suffers Elantris because he doesn't have to think about it. If an Elantrian kills one of his nobles, however, he could very well decide to exterminate the lot of us. People were appearing in the alleys around the courtyard. None appeared to be Sheor's men. They were the tired, wretched forms of those Elantrians who still lived on their own, wandering through the city like shades. More and more of them had been joining with Riordan, but now, with free food available, he would never get the rest of them. They would continue without thought or purpose, lost in their pain and damnation.
Oh, my lovely princess, Riordan whispered. You probably mean well, but handing these people food is the worst thing you could do to them.
Marishi waited at the bottom of the stairs.
Did you see her?
He asked anxiously.
We did, Riordan said.
What does she want?
Before Riordan could reply, a firm, feminine voice called out of the courtyard, I would speak with the tyrants of this city, the ones who call themselves Aeyndin, Kerita, and Sheor. Present yourselves to me.
Where?
Riordan asked with surprise.
Remarkably well informed, isn't she? Marishi noted. A little outdated, though, Galadin added.
Riordan ground his teeth, thinking quickly. Marishi, send a runner for Kerita. Tell her to meet us at the university.
Yes, my lord, the man said, waving over a messenger boy.
Oh, Riordan said, and have Saolin bring half of his soldiers and meet us there. He's going to need to keep an eye on Sheor's men.
I could fetch them myself if my lord wishes, offered Marishi, ever watchful for a chance to impress.
No, Riordan said. You have to practice being Aeyndin.
Chapter 23 Eondel and Shuden both insisted on going with her. Eondel kept one hand on his sword. He usually wore the weapon no matter what Aerilish propriety said about them. And he watched both their guide and their complement of Elantra city guards with equal amounts of suspicion. For their parts, the guards did a fair job of looking nonchalant, as if coming into Elantris were an everyday occurrence. Serene could sense their anxiety, however. Everyone had objected at first. It was unthinkable that she let herself be lured into the bowels of Elantris to meet with despots. Serene, however, was determined to prove that the city was harmless. She couldn't very well balk at a short trip inside, if she wanted to persuade the other nobles to enter the gates. We're nearly there, the guide said. He was a taller man, about the same height as Serene in heels. The gray parts of his skin were a little lighter than those on the other Elantrian she had seen. though she didn't know if that meant he had been pale-skinned before, or if he had simply been in Elantris a shorter time than the rest. He had an oval face that might have been handsome before the Sheod destroyed it. He wasn't a servant. He walked with too proud a gait. Serene guessed that even though he was acting as a simple messenger, he was one of the trusted minions of an Elantris gang leader. "What is your name?" she asked, careful to keep her tone neutral. He belonged to one of three groups who, according to Aishi's sources, ruled the city like warlords and enslaved those who were newly cast inside. The man didn't respond immediately. "They call me Spirit," he eventually said. A fitting name, Serene thought, for this man who is so much a ghost of what he once must have been. They approached a large building that the man, Spirit, informed her, used to be Elantris' university. Serene regarded the building with a critical eye. It was covered with the same odd brownish-green sludge that coated the rest of the city. And while the structure might have once been great, now it was just another ruin. Serene hesitated as their guide walked into the building. In Serene's estimation, the upper floor was seriously considering a collapse. She shot Eondel a look. The older man was apprehensive, rubbing his chin in thought. Then he shrugged, giving Serene a nod. "We've come this far," he seemed to be saying. So, trying not to think about the sagging ceiling, Serene led her band of friends and soldiers into the structure. Fortunately, they didn't have to go far. A group of Elantrians stood near the back of the first room, their dark-skinned faces barely visible in the dim light. Two stood in what appeared to be the rubble of a fallen table, raising their heads a few feet above the others. "Eäinden?" Serene asked. "And Kerita," replied the second form, apparently a woman, though her bald head and wrinkled face were virtually indistinguishable from those of a man. "What do you want of us?" "I was led to believe you two were enemies," Serene said suspiciously. "We recently realized the benefits of an alliance," Eäinden said. He was a short man with cautious eyes, his small face shriveled like that of a rodent. His pompous, self-important attitude was about what Serene had expected. "And the man known as Sheor?" Serene asked. Kerita smiled. "One of the aforementioned benefits." "Dead?" Eäinden nodded. "We rule Elantris now, princess. What do you want?" Serene didn't answer immediately. She had been planning to play the three different gang leaders against each other. She would have to present herself differently to a unified enemy. "I want to bribe you," she said straightforwardly. The woman raised an eyebrow with interest, but the small man huffed. "What need have we of your bribes, woman?" Serene had played this game far too often. Eäinden used the uninterested front of a man unaccustomed to serious politics. She had met men like him dozens of times while serving in her father's diplomatic corps, and she was very tired of them. "Look," Serene said, "let's be frank. You're obviously not very good at this, and so extended negotiations would be a waste of time. I want to bring food to the people of Elantris, and you're going to resist me because you think it will weaken your hold on them. Right now you're probably trying to figure out how to control who benefits from my offerings and who doesn't." The man squirmed uncomfortably, and Serene smiled. "That is why I'm going to bribe you. What will it take for you to let the people come and get food freely?" Eäinden balked, obviously uncertain how to proceed. The woman, however, spoke firmly. "You have a scribe to write down our demands?" "I do," Serene said. gesturing for Shuden to pull out his paper and charcoal pen. The list was extensive, even larger than Serene had expected, and it included many odd items. She had assumed they would request weapons, perhaps even gold. Kerita's demands, however, began with cloth, moved through various grains, some worked metal sheets, lengths of wood, straw, and ended with oil. The message was clear. Rule of Elantris depended not on force or wealth, but on controlling basic necessities. Serene agreed to the demands curtly. If she had been dealing with Aenden only, she would have argued for less. But this Kerita was a straightforward, unwavering woman, the type who didn't have much patience for haggling. "Is that everything?" Serene asked, as Shuden scribbled down the final request. "That will do for the first few days," Kerita said. Serene narrowed her eyes. "Fine. But I have one rule you have to follow. You can't forbid anyone from coming to the courtyard. Rule as despots if you wish, but at least let the people suffer with full stomachs." "You have my word," Kerita said. "I will keep no one back." Serene nodded, motioning that the meeting was finished. Kerita assigned a guide to lead them back to the gate, not Spirit this time. He stayed behind, approaching the city's two tyrants as Serene left the building.
"Was that good enough, my lord?" Marishi asked eagerly.
"Marishi, that was perfect," Raoden replied, watching the retreating princess with satisfaction. Marishi smiled modestly.
"Well, my lord, I do my best. I haven't much experience with acting, but I do think I played a properly decisive and intimidating leader."
Raoden caught Kerita's eye. The gruff woman was trying very hard not to laugh. The pompous artisan had been perfect, neither decisive or intimidating. People outside Elantris saw the city as a lawless realm, lorded over by harsh, thieving despots. Together, Marishi and Kerita had portrayed exactly what the princess and her companions had expected to see.
"She suspected something, Sule," Galadin noted, walking out of the shadows at the side of the room.
"Yes, but she doesn't know what," Raoden said. "Let her suspect that Aenden and Kerita are playing tricks on her. It will do no harm."
Galadin shook his head slightly, his bald head shining in the dim light.
"What's the point? Why not bring her to the chapel? Let her see what we really are."
"I'd like to, Galadin," Raoden said. "But we can't afford to let out our secret. The people of Aerilon tolerate Elantris because the Elantrians are so pitiful. If they discover we're establishing a civilized society, their fears will surface. A mass of moaning wretches is one thing. A legion of unkillable monstrosities is another."
Kerita nodded, saying nothing. Galadin, the eternal skeptic, simply shook his head, as if unsure what to think.
"Well, she certainly is determined.
Kolo?" he finally asked, referring to Serene.
"Determined indeed," Raoden agreed. Then, with amusement, he continued, "And I don't think she likes me very much."
"She thinks you're the lackey of a tyrant," Kerita pointed out.
"Is she supposed to like you?"
"True," Raoden said. "However, I think we should add a clause to our agreement that says I can attend all of her distributions. I want to keep an eye on our benevolent princess. She doesn't strike me as the type to do anything without several motives. And I wonder just what made her decide to do her trial here in Elantris."
"That went well," Eondel said, watching their guide disappear back into Elantris.
You got away easily,
Shuden agreed. The things they demanded can be obtained without much expenditure.
Serene nodded slightly, rubbing her fingers along the cart's wooden side.
I just hate to deal with people like that.
Perhaps you judge them too harshly, Shuden said. They seemed less like tyrants, and more like people trying to make the best of a very difficult life.
Serene shook her head. You should hear some of the stories Aishi told me, Shuden. The guards say that when new Elantrians are thrown into the city, the gangs descend on them like sharks. What few resources enter the city go to the gang leaders, and they keep the rest of the people in a state of near starvation.
Shuden raised an eyebrow, looking over at the Elantra city guards, the source of Serene's information. The group leaned lazily on their spears, watching with uninterested eyes as the nobleman began unloading the cart.
All right, Serene admitted, climbing into the cart and handing Shuden a box of vegetables. Perhaps they aren't the most reliable source, but we have proof in front of us.
She swept her arm toward the emaciated forms that clustered in side streets.
Look at their hollow eyes and apprehensive steps. These are a people who live in fear, Shuden. I've seen it before in Fjorden, Rovell, and a half dozen other places. I know what an oppressed people looks like.
True, Shuden admitted, accepting the box from Serene. But the leaders didn't look much better to me. Perhaps they aren't oppressive, just equally oppressed.
Perhaps, Serene said.
My lady, Eondel protested, as Serene lifted another box and handed it to Shuden. I wish you would step back and let us move those. It just isn't proper.
I'll be fine, Eondel, Serene said, handing him a box. There's a reason I didn't bring any servants. I want us all to take part. That includes you, my lord, Serene added, nodding to Ahane, who had found a shaded spot near the gate to rest.
Ahane sighed, rising and waddling out into the sunlight. The day had turned remarkably hot for one so early in the spring, and the sun was blazing overhead, though even its heat hadn't been able to dry out the omnipresent Elantris muck.
I hope you appreciate my sacrifice, Serene, the overweight Ahane exclaimed. This slime is absolutely ruining my cloak.
Serves you right, Serene said, handing the count a box of boiled potatoes. I told you to wear something inexpensive.
I don't have anything inexpensive, my dear,
Ahane said, accepting the box with a sullen look.
You mean to tell me you actually paid money for that robe you wore to Neoden's wedding?
Roil asked, approaching with a laugh.
I wasn't even aware that shade of orange existed, Ahane.
The count scowled, lugging his box to the front of the cart. Serene didn't hand Roil a box, nor did he move to receive one. It had been big news in the court a few days before, when someone had noticed the Duke walking with a limp. Rumors claimed he had fallen one morning while climbing out of bed. Roile's spry attitude sometimes made it difficult to remember that he was, in fact, a very old man. Serene got into a rhythm, giving out boxes as hands appeared to take them, which is why she didn't notice at first that a new figure had joined the others. Nearing the final few boxes, she happened to look up at the man accepting the load. She nearly dropped the box in shock as she recognized his face.
You? She said with amazement.
The Elantrian known as Spirit smiled, taking the box out of her stunned fingers.
I was wondering how long it would take you to realize I was here.
How long? Oh, about 10 minutes now, he replied. I arrived just after you began unloading. Spirit took the box away, stacking it with the others. Serene stood in muted stupefaction on the back of the cart. She must have mistaken his dark hands for Shuden's brown ones. A throat cleared in front of her, and Serene realized with a start that Eondel was waiting for a box. She rushed to comply. Why is he here? She wondered, as she dropped the box into Eondel's arms.
He claims that his master ordered him to watch the distribution. Apparently Aendon trusts you about as much as you trust him.
Serene delivered the last two boxes, then hopped down from the back of the cart. She hit the cobblestones at the wrong angle, however, and slipped in the muck. She tipped backward, waving her hands and yelping. Fortunately, a pair of hands caught her and pulled her upright.
Be careful, Spirit warned. Walking in Elantris takes a little getting used to.
Serene pulled her arms out of his helpful grasp.
Thank you, she muttered in a very unprincess-like voice.
Spirit raised an eyebrow, then moved to stand next to the Aerilish lords. Serene sighed, rubbing her elbow where Spirit had caught her. Something about his touch seemed oddly tender. She shook her head to dispel such imaginings. More important things demanded her attention. The Elantrians were not approaching. There were more of them now, perhaps 50, clustered hesitantly and bird-like in the shadows. Some were obviously children, but most were of the same indeterminable age. Their wrinkled Elantrian skin made them all look as old as Roile. None approached the food.
Why aren't they coming? Serene asked with confusion.
They're scared, Spirit said, and disbelieving. This much food must seem like an illusion, a devilish trick their minds have surely played on them hundreds of times. He spoke softly, even compassionately. His words were not those of a despotic warlord. Spirit reached down and selected a turnip from one of the carts. He held it lightly, staring at it as if he himself were unsure of its reality. There was a ravenousness in his eyes, the hunger of a man who hadn't seen a good meal in weeks. With a start, Serene realized that this man was as famished as the rest of them, despite his favored rank. And he had patiently helped unload dozens of boxes filled with food. Spirit finally lifted the turnip and took a bite. The vegetable crunched in his mouth, and Serene could imagine how it must taste, raw and bitter. Yet reflected in his eyes, it seemed a feast. Spirit's acceptance of the food seemed to give approval to the others, for the mass of people surged forward. The Elantra city guards finally perked up, and they quickly surrounded Serene and the others, their long spears held out threateningly.
Leave a space, here before the boxes, Serene ordered.
The guards parted, allowing Elantrians to approach a few at a time. Serene and the lord stood behind the boxes, distributing food to the weary supplicants. Even Ahane stopped griping as he got into the work, doling out food in solemn silence. Serene saw him give a bag to what must have been a little girl, though her head was bald and her lips creased with wrinkles. The girl smiled with an incongruous innocence, then scampered away. Ahane paused for a moment before continuing his labor.
It's working, Serene thought with relief. If she could touch Ahane, then she might be able to do the same for the rest of the court.
As she worked, Serene noticed the man's spirit standing near the back of the crowd. His hand was raised thoughtfully to his chin as he studied her. He seemed worried,
But why? What had he to be worried about? It was then, staring into his eyes, that Serene knew the truth. This was no lackey. He was the leader. And for some reason he felt he needed to hide that fact from her. So Serene did what she always did when she learned that someone was keeping things from her. She tried to find out what they were. "There's something about him, Aishi," Serene said, standing outside the palace and watching the empty food cart pull away. It was hard to believe that for all the afternoon's work, they had distributed only 3 meals. It would all be gone by noon tomorrow, if it wasn't gone already. "Who, my lady?" Aishi asked. He had watched the food distribution from the top of the wall, near where Iodine had been standing. He had wanted to accompany her, of course, but she had forbidden it. The Sion was her main source of information about Elantris and its leaders, and she didn't want to make an obvious connection between the two of them. "The guide," Serene explained, as she turned and strolled through the broad, tapestry-lined entryway of the king's palace. Iodine liked tapestries far too much for her taste. "The man called Spirit?" Serene nodded. He pretended to be following the others' orders, but he was no servant. Aendon kept shooting glances at him during our negotiations, as if looking for reassurance. "Do you think perhaps we got the names of the leaders wrong?"
"It's possible, my lady," Aishi admitted. "However, the Elantrians I spoke with seemed very certain. Kerita, Aendon, and Sheor were the names I heard at least a dozen times. No one mentioned a man named Spirit."
"Have you spoken with these people recently?" Serene asked.
"Actually, I have been focusing my efforts on the guards," Aishi said, bobbing to the side as a courier rushed past him. People had a tendency to ignore Sions with a level of indifference that would have been offensive to any human attendant. Aishi took it all without complaint, not even breaking his dialogue. "The Elantrians were hesitant to give anything more than names, my lady. The guards, however, were very free with their opinions. They have little to do all day besides watch the city. I put their observations together with the names I gathered, and produced what I told you." Serene paused for a moment, leaning against a marble pillar.
"He's hiding something."
"Oh dear," Aishi mumbled. "My lady, don't you think you might be overextending yourself? You've decided to confront the Yawn, liberate the court women from masculine oppression, save Erilon's economy, and feed Elantris. Perhaps you should just let this man's subterfuge go unexplored."
"You're right," Serene said. "I am too busy to deal with Spirit. That's why you are going to find out what he's up to." Aishi sighed. "Go back to the city," Serene said. "You shouldn't have to go very far inside. A lot of Elantrians loiter near the gate. Ask them about Spirit, and see if you can discover anything about the treaty between Kerita and Aendon."
"Yes, my lady."
"I wonder if maybe we misjudged Elantris," Serene said.
"I don't know, my lady," Aishi said. "It is a very barbarous place. I witnessed several atrocious acts myself, and saw the aftermath of many others. Everyone in that city bears wounds of some sort, and from the sounds of their moans, I would guess that many of the injuries are severe. Fighting must be common."
Serene nodded absently. However, she couldn't help thinking of Spirit, and how strikingly unbarbaric he had been. He'd put the lords at ease, conversing with them affably, as if he weren't damned, and they the ones who had locked him away. She had found herself almost liking him by the end of the afternoon.
though she worried that he was toying with her. So she had remained indifferent, even cold toward Spirit, reminding herself that many a murderer and tyrant could appear very friendly if he wanted to. Her heart, however, told her that this man was genuine. He was hiding things, as all men did, but he honestly wanted to help Elantris. For some reason, he seemed particularly concerned with Serene's opinion of him. And walking out of the entryway toward her own rooms, Serene had to try very hard before she convinced herself that she didn't care what he thought of her. Chapter 24. Raythan was hot within his blood-red armor, exposed as he was to the bright sunlight. He was consoled by how imposing he must look, standing atop the wall with his armor shining in the light. Of course, no one was looking at him. They were all watching the tall, Teoish princess distribute her food. Her decision to enter Elantris had shocked the town, and the king's subsequent bestowal of permission had done so again. The walls of Elantris had filled early, nobles and merchants packing themselves along the open, wall-top walkway. They had come with faces like men watching a Svartish shark fight, leaning over the wall to get the best view of what many projected would be a thrilling disaster. It was commonly thought that the savages of Elantris would rip the princess apart within the first few minutes of her entrance, then proceed to devour her. Raythan watched with resignation as Elantris's monsters came placidly, refusing to ingest even a single guard, let alone the princess. His demons refused to perform, and he could see the disappointment in the crowd's faces. The princess's move had been masterful, castrating Raythan's devils with a sweep of the brutal scythe known as Truth. Now that Serene's personal aristocrats had proven their courage by entering Elantris, pride would force the others to do so as well. Hatred of Elantris would evaporate, for people couldn't fear that which they pitied. As soon as it became obvious that no princesses would be devoured this day, the people lost interest, returning down the wall's long flight of steps in a steady, dissatisfied trickle. Raythan joined them, climbing down the steps, then turning toward the center of Kei and the Dorethi Chapel. As he walked, however, a carriage pulled up alongside him. Raythan recognized the Aeon on its side. Aeon Rhyai. The carriage pulled to a stop, and the door opened. Raythan paused for just a moment, then climbed in, seating himself opposite Duke Telrhyai. The Duke was obviously not pleased. "I warned you about that woman. The people will never hate Elantris now, and if they don't hate Elantris, they won't hate Shu-Korath either." Raythan waved his hand. "The girl's efforts are irrelevant. I don't see how that is the case." "How long can she keep this up?" Raythan asked. "A few weeks? A month at the most?" "Right now, her excursions are a novelty, but that will wear off soon. I doubt many of the nobility will be willing to accompany her in the future, even if she does try and keep these feedings going." "The damage is done," Telrhyai said insistently. "Hardly," Raythan said. "Lord Telrhyai, it has barely been a few weeks since I arrived in Aerilon. Yes, the woman has dealt us a setback, but it will prove a minor inconvenience. You know, as I know, that the nobility are a fickle group. How long do you think it will take them to forget their visits into Elantris?" Telrhyai didn't look convinced. "Besides," Raythan said, trying another tactic, "my work with Elantris was only a small part of our plan.
the instability of Iodin's throne, the embarrassment he will sustain at the next taxing period, is what we should be focusing on. The king recently found some new contracts in Teode, Telrai said.
They won't be enough to recoup his losses,
Raythan said dismissively.
His finances are crippled. The nobility will never stand for a king who insists that they maintain their level of wealth, but who doesn't apply the same standard to himself. Soon, we can begin spreading rumors as to the king's reduced circumstances. Most of the high-ranking nobility are merchants themselves. They have means of discovering how their competitors are doing. They'll find out just how much Iodin is hurting, and they'll begin to complain.
Complaints won't put me on the throne, Telrai said.
You'd be surprised, Raythan said. Besides, at that same time, we'll begin implying that if you were to take the throne, you would bring Aerilon a lucrative trade treaty with the East. I can provide you with the proper documents. There will be money enough for all. That is something that Iodin hasn't been able to provide. Your people know that this country is on the verge of financial ruin. Fjordan can bring you out of it.
Telrai nodded slowly.
Yes, Telrai, Raythan thought with an inward sigh. That's something you can understand, isn't it? If we can't convert the nobility, we can always just buy them.
The tactic wasn't as certain as Raythan implied, but the explanation would do for Telrai, while Raythan devised other plans. Once it was known that the king was bankrupt and Telrai was rich, certain other pressures placed on the government would make for an easy, if abrupt, transfer in power. The princess had countered the wrong scheme. Iodin's throne would collapse even as she handed out food to the Elantrians, thinking herself clever for having foiled Raythan's plot.
I warn you, Raythan, Telrai said suddenly. Do not assume me a Dorethi pawn. I go along with your plans because you were able to produce the wealth that you promised me. I won't just sit back and be pushed in any direction you wish, however.
I wouldn't dream of it, your lordship, Raythan said smoothly. Telrai nodded, calling for the coachman to stop. They weren't even halfway to the Dorethi Chapel.
My mansion is that direction, Telrai said airily, pointing down a side street. You can walk the rest of the way to your chapel.
Raythan clenched his jaw. Someday this man would have to learn proper respect for Dorethi officials. For now, however, Raythan simply climbed out of the carriage. Considering the company, he preferred walking anyway.
I've never seen this kind of response in Aerilon, one priest noted.
Agreed, said his companion. I've been serving the Empire in Kaye for over a decade, and we've never had more than a few conversions a year.
Raythan passed the priests as he entered the Dorethi Chapel. They were minor under-priests, of little concern to him. He noticed them only because of Dilaf.
It has been a long while, Dilaf agreed. Though I remember a time, just after the pirate Drio Crushthroat assaulted Teode, when there was a wave of conversions in Aerilon.
Raythan frowned. Something about Dilaf's comment bothered him. He forced himself to continue walking, but he shot a glance back at the Ardeth. Drio Crushthroat had attacked Teode 15 years before. It was possible that Dilaf would remember such a thing from his childhood, but how would he have known about Aerilon conversion rates? The Ardeth had to be older than Raythan had assumed, much older. Raythan's eyes widened
as he studied Dilaf's face in his mind. He had placed Dilaf as no older than 25, but he could now detect hints of age in the artist's face. Only hints, however. He was probably one of those rare individuals who seemed many years younger than they really were. The young Aerilish priest feigned lack of experience. But his planning and scheming revealed an otherwise hidden degree of maturity. Dilaf was far more seasoned than he had led people to assume. But what did that mean? Raythan shook his head, pushing the door open and walking into his rooms. Dilaf's power over the chapel was growing, as Raythan struggled to find an appropriate and willing new head artith. Three more men had refused the position. That was more than just suspicious. Raythan was certain that Dilaf had something to do with the matter.
"He's older than you assumed," Raythan thought. "He's also had influence over Kay's priests for a very long time."
Dilaf claimed that many of the original Durethi followers in Kay had originally come from his personal chapel in southern Aerilan. How long had it been since he'd come to Kay? Fionn had been head artith when Dilaf arrived, but Fionn's leadership in the city had lasted a long time. Dilaf had probably been in the city for years. He had probably been associating with the other priests, learning to influence them, gaining authority over them, that entire time. And given Dilaf's ardor for Shudarath, he had undoubtedly chosen the most conservative and effective of K.E.'s artists to be his associates. And those were exactly the men Raythan had let remain in the city when he'd first arrived. He'd sent away the less devoted men, and they would have been the ones that would have been insulted or disturbed by Dilaf's extreme ardor. Unwittingly, Raythan had culled the chapel's numbers in Dilaf's favor. Raythan sat down at his desk, this new revelation disturbing him. No wonder he was having trouble finding a new head artith. Those who remained knew Dilaf well. They were probably either afraid to take a position above him, or they had been bribed by him to step aside. "He can't have that kind of influence over them all," Raythan thought firmly. "I'll just have to keep looking. Eventually, one of the priests will take the position." Still, he was worried about Dilaf's startling effectiveness. The artith held two firm grips over Raythan. First, Dilaf still had power over many of Raythan's strongest converts through his Odiv oaths. Second, the artith's unofficial leadership of the chapel was growing more and more secure. Without a head artith, and with Raythan spending much of his time giving sermons or meeting with nobility, Dilaf had slowly been siphoning away power over the day-to-day workings of the Durethi Church in Aerilan. And over it all, there was an even more disturbing problem, something Raythan didn't want to confront, something even more disarming than Serene's trial or Dilaf's maneuverings. Raythan could face external forces such as theirs, and he could be victorious. His internal wavering, however, was something entirely different. He reached into his desk, seeking out a small book. He remembered unpacking it into the drawer, as he had during countless other moves. He hadn't looked at it in years, but he had very few possessions, and so he had never found himself overburdened enough to discard the book. Eventually, he located it. He flipped through the aging pages, selecting the one he was looking for. "I have found purpose," the book read.
Before, I lived, but I didn't know why. I have direction now. It gives glory to all that I do. I serve in Lord Yadith's empire, and my service is linked directly to him. I am important. Priests in the Dorethi faith were trained to record spiritual experiences. But Raythan had never been diligent in this particular area. His personal record contained only a few entries, including this one, which he had written a few weeks after his decision to join the priesthood many years before, just before he entered Dachor Monastery. What happened to your faith, Raythan? Omine's questions plagued Raythan's thoughts. He heard the Karathi priest whispering in his mind, demanding to know what had happened to Raythan's beliefs, demanding to know the purpose behind his preaching. Had Raythan become cynical, performing his duties simply because they were familiar? Had his preaching become a logical challenge and not a spiritual quest? He knew, in part, that it had. He enjoyed the planning, the confrontation, and the thinking it took to convert an entire nation of heretics. Even with Dilaf distracting him, Raythan found the challenge of Aerilan invigorating. But what of the boy, Raythan? What of the faith, the almost unthinking passion he had once felt? He could barely remember it. That part of his life had passed quickly, his faith transforming from a burning flame into a comfortable warmth. Why did Raythan want to succeed in Aerilan? Was it for the notoriety? The man who converted Aerilan would be long remembered in the annals of the Dorethi Church. Was it a desire to be obedient? He did, after all, have a direct order from Wyrn. Was it because he seriously thought conversion would help the people? He had determined to succeed in Aerilan without a slaughter, such as he had instigated in Dúladel. But again, was it really because he wanted to save lives? Or was it because he knew that a smooth conquest was more difficult, and therefore more of a challenge? His heart was as unclear to him as a room filled with smoke. Dilaf was slowly seizing control. That in itself wasn't as frightening as Raythan's own sense of foreboding. What if Dilaf was right to try and oust Raythan? What if Aerilan would be better off with Dilaf in control? Dilaf wouldn't have worried about the death caused by a bloody revolution. He would have known that the people would eventually be better off with Shudarath, even if their initial conversion required a massacre. Dilaf had faith. Dilaf believed in what he was doing. What did Raythan have? He wasn't certain anymore. Chapter 25.
I think perhaps that she needs this food as much as we do, Raoden said, regarding the slight-framed Torina with a skeptical eye. Ahane's daughter had pulled her reddish-gold hair up under a protective scarf, and she wore a simple blue dress, something she'd probably had to borrow from one of her maids, considering the average Aerilish noblewoman's extravagant wardrobe. Be nice to her, Serene ordered, handing Rayad in a box from the cart. She's the only woman brave enough to come, though she only agreed because I had Shudan ask her. If you scare that girl away, none of the others will ever come.
Yes, Your Highness, Raoden said, bowing slightly. It seemed that a week's worth of distributing food together had softened her hatred of him somewhat, but she was still cold. She would respond to his comments, even converse with him, but she would not let herself be his friend. The week had been surreally unnerving for Raoden. He'd spent